Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Frank Schaefer, who is a best-selling author of fiction and nonfiction. His parents, Francis and Edith Schaefer, were world-famous evangelical speakers and authors, and he previously worked with such figures as Pat Robertson, Jerry Falwell, and Focus on the Family's James Dobson. Frank Schaefer, however, felt increasingly alienated and experienced a crisis of faith that would ultimately lead to his departure from the evangelical movement. His novels include Portofino and Saving Grandma, and his nonfiction books include Crazy for God, Patience with God, Faith for People Who Don't Like Religion or Atheism, Sex, Mom and God, and his latest, And God Said Billy. Welcome to Background Briefing, Frank Schaefer.
Hey, thanks, Ian.
And the Supreme Court just ruled 5-4 in favor of the town of, or the town board, I guess the council in effect, of a small town called Greece, New York, where,
right,
where Christian prayers had been offered to open up council meetings. And some members of that town who felt uncomfortable with these prayers brought this suit. What do you make of the Supreme Court's ruling on this, which a lot of people are very concerned about,
right,
in terms of the division of church and state in this country?
Well, you know, this goes back 30 years plus. There, Marsh versus Chambers, which upheld the Nebraska legislator's funding of a chaplain who delivered prayers, was kind of where this started. And Warrenberger ruled that such prayers were part of the fabric of society. And so it seesawed between that and then the ruling against prayers in public schools. And, of course, let's cut to the chase here. What this is really about is the politics of religion in America. And the 5-4 majority represents the Republican slash Roman Catholic conservative wing of the court. And until President Obama is able to replace one of those people in what's left of his term and or the next president, you know, this is going to continue to divide this way. So when you have Scalia, for instance, who is the linchpin of the conservative court when it comes to the ideology coming from the Roman Catholic bishops and others, on the court, and those who vote with him, you're always going to have it break this way. And, you know, when you look at someone like Antonin Scalia and his political involvement personally and with his wife and also in all the various Roman Catholic groups he's part of, with people like Robert George of Princeton, who is a Roman Catholic ideologue on the very far right and who was an advisor to John McCain and other presidential contenders, who essentially works with Scalia on a lot of these Roman Catholic issues that the foundations and other people bring up. You know, you also see the same trend when it comes to contraceptives, the bishops turning this into a civil rights issue, saying that it is the right of Roman Catholics to refuse to have corporations they run pay for insurance for women and coverage of contraceptives and other health care issues. These aren't isolated incidents. So what I have to point out here is that this is nothing to do with a specific ruling about prayer in a little town called Greece. What this is about is a kind of the afterglow of the last 40 years of culture war battles that I write about in books like Crazy for God, where I talk about my own family's involvement when I was on the religious right with my father back in the 70s and 80s. And these are exactly the type of issues that we were urging evangelical Christians to fight in court. Whether it's closing down an abortion clinic using zoning laws or hospital operating privileges, or whether it's bringing cases like this to court. So I think, you know, you got two issues here, Ian. You've got the individual issue of Greece, not the country, the little town, prayer, and a couple of people who were bothered. You have the larger tug of war between the religious right, the Roman Catholic conservative bishops, the people that represent them on the courts and in Congress, and not just the Obama administration, but a more liberal view of religion, which says that essentially in a pluralistic culture like ours, you know, you cannot give precedence to one expression of religious faith, that religious freedom also means freedom from the imposition of religion in places where you don't expect it, like people who go to a town meeting to talk about zoning ordinances suddenly find themselves confronted with a Christian prayer. And so you got these two issues running side by side, a general culture war issue. This is just the latest manifestation out of dozens. And then the particular issue at hand. And that's really the perspective that I bring to this particular issue.
Well, in terms of this 5-4 vote, though, three of the four dissenters on the Supreme Court are Jewish. That's Justices Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Stephen Breyer, and Elena Kagan. And the fourth, Justice Sonia Sotomayor, is a Catholic, which had made six Catholics, in fact, on the Supreme Court. But she's not a regular churchgoer. But the others, Kennedy is a little more moderate. But there's no question that Roberts, Scalia, Clarence Thomas, and Samuel Alito are ultra-conservatives. I mean, you would have to go... And that's one of the strange things about the Catholic faith until this new pope came along. The popes have been so far to the right, the last two before this one was so far to the right, it was breathtaking. And the same is true here in the United States. You can't find too many American Catholics who are as conservative as Anton Scalia, Clarence Thomas, and Samuel Alito and John Roberts. You'd really have to scour the planet.
That's correct.
How did we end up with these guys? I don't know.
You ended up with these guys because of the evangelical Christians, going back to Ronald Reagan when he was running and stood up on the platform of the National Religious Broadcasters at the convention when he was running for re-election, and he said, "I'm one of you." And essentially what you've got to understand about Scalia is he's not really a Roman Catholic. He is an evangelical Christian who also is a conservative Roman Catholic, but you can't really get what he's doing unless you understand people like the late Charles Colson, Chuck Colson, who was, you know, the henchman of Nixon and his dirty tricks. Colson converted to evangelical Christianity, and he apologized for his role in Watergate, but he brought with him that Nixonian ability to try to dredge up whether it's racial issues or any other kind of dirty trick to advance political agendas. Really, what you've got on the Supreme Court is the same thing you have in some of these conservative Roman Catholic bishops like Dolan in New York. You've got essentially people carrying on the evangelical Protestant right-wing residue from the Moral Majority, Pat Roberts and these other guys who insinuated themselves into the political process with, by the way, help from my late father, Francis Schaeffer, that I write about in my books, Like Crazy for God. And that's my own background, so I guess I'm pretty attuned to it. But the fact is, really what's happened is that these folks don't represent so much the core of American Roman Catholicism as they do doing the bidding of the evangelicals, people like the late Jerry Falwell, but also people like Dr. Dobson and Focus on the Family. And if you look at the evangelical agenda, they always have been looking for ways to shape the political agenda without looking as if they're doing it. So, for instance, you know, when you look at the abortion issue, they never present a frontal assault on it. They go around changing zoning and hospital privileges and these other things. When you look at the prayer in schools issue, the way they attack this is through trying to affect the election of presidents and therefore the appointment of Supreme Court justices. And their sop, their reward, is that when someone like a Ronald Reagan or a George W. Bush or appoints people to the court, they kind of vet them for these issues. And these are the tokens that they're given in return. And, of course, you know, the context here is that on the other side, you've got the Supreme Court having unleashed people like the Koch brothers that have no interest in these religious rights issues but only are doing what they're doing in transforming the political landscape from the point of view of what's good for the coal companies and the oil companies and the other polluters. But from time to time, you get these issues where a sop, as it were, gets thrown to the religious right via these Roman Catholics who depend on the foot soldiers of the evangelical voters to essentially vote in and keep alive the kind of Rick Santorum agenda in Congress. And often these guys are evangelicals rather than Catholics, but they become fellow travelers. And so that's what this is. This is Scalia keeping his evangelical buddies on the far right happy and in a way rewarding them for putting him where he is, because without those votes, people like Bush and Reagan and others would never have been able to appoint the far right of the justices who were in the court in the majority now.
So this ruling now has, as we said, it's very critical in terms of the separation of church and state. But that the separation of church and state in terms of these pledges that take place every day somewhere in the United States and particularly in schools all across the nation, people recite the pledge one nation under God. And that goes on everywhere. And that never used to be the case. That the under God part was included in the Pledge of Allegiance in the 1950s during the McCarthy era, right. I think as a way to contrast America with the godless communists.
Right. You've had several waves of this. It starts in the McCarthy era, and then, I mean, in terms of the modern events we're talking about, that's a kind of a reaction to the communists and becomes part of the anti-communist movement. And then you kind of update it post-60s, in the beginning of the culture war against the sexual revolution, and all of a sudden, you know, you have an anti-feminist spin, and the equal treatment of women becomes an issue, and then that becomes the catalyst in the kind of anti-abortion movement, and now you update to the present. And as I said, these are kind of token rulings. I don't mean they're unimportant, but they're token rulings which basically tell the conservative base, hey, we're on your side, we're on track. And so it's a double hammer blow against an anvil. Look at what's happening. I mean, the court opens up unlimited contributions by wealthy secret donors like the Koch brothers through their PACs. On one hand, treating corporations as persons, and free speech suddenly becomes an issue of corporate investment in keeping the polluters in business, the oil companies, the coal companies, and so forth, anti-regulation, denial of global warming and climate change, et cetera. On the one hand, an absolute free-for-all, and then on the other hand, you have the religious right is basically rewarded for continuing to vote for a congressional majority and hopefully, from their point of view, a Senate majority and maybe even a presidential candidate in the next round. And keeping these folks happy is very, very important. And so folks like the Koch brothers don't care about prayer in schools. They don't care about, you know, whether you can open a local assembly and a town council with prayer. But what they do care about, and where the big money in the Republican Party and where the interest politically in the Supreme Court, which is, after all, a very political animal now, having given free rein to the Koch brothers to essentially buy American politics, you have to keep the troops happy, and the troops are evangelical voters, know-nothing, you know, white folks in the South, an aging population, and occasionally something has to be done to let these folks know that beside allowing a complete free-for-all of polluters or a free-for-all of corporate spending in American politics, you know, once in a while they get a token, and this is one of those tokens. And so when you see the Roman Catholic bishops and people like Antonin Scalia and the others going after issues like cutting the insurance companies out of the process of providing contraceptives to women or these other things, these are not the issues the right-wing corporate people care about, but they are the issues that the foot soldiers who control the process of the Tea Party, who control the process of in elections when it comes to the primaries, they do care about this stuff. And so it's not written down anywhere, and it's not a vast right-wing conspiracy, but the fact is it's a quid pro quo. We will throw you a sop on prayer so you can go talk about Jesus in a town council or God or whatever it may be. And, you know, in return, when we give free rein to the polluters in Appalachia, or we hand over West Virginia to the Koch brothers, which is just happening right now as we speak, and allow that to become a kind of a test case for the way they're going to take over the entire political structure of the Republican Party, you know, we'll keep you happy by letting you say your little prayers in the town council. And so, yeah, there's a basic civil rights issue and a canary in the coal mine we ought to all be aware of, but it's also a larger ploy. It's a bigger play. And a guy like Scalia is a total political animal. He is playing for keeps, and so are these other right-wing ideologues on the court. So the idea of a neutral court standing above the fray is complete BS. These guys have unleashed the Koch brothers and their henchmen on us, and now when it comes to keeping the foot soldiers happy, they will throw them a sop once in a while. And you'll see when the next abortion-related case comes down the line, when it comes to something like, for instance, not giving hospital operating privileges to local abortion providers, there'll be more sops thrown. And this is the way the voters on the right, the evangelical voters, the conservative Roman Catholics and so forth, the Tea Party, which is 60-70% the evangelical base, the aging white base, reacting against the demographic changes in our country, the people who hate President Obama on principle, et cetera. you know, these folks have to once in a while win one. And I think really, it may sound cynical, but this is what this is really about. It's not really about the issue. It's about allowing the folks to win one once in a while that care about this stuff while their betters, as they see themselves, the Koch brothers, people like Antonin Scalia, who are playing for a much longer game of turning America far right into a kind of an oligarchy controlled by the 1%, you know, that's the game they're playing. But once in a while, mom and pop on the street corner who care whether they can open prayer, their little session in prayer or not in a local town council, they have to win one. So that's what this is about. It's a political ploy by people in the court who are playing politics with the rule of law.
Well, Frank Schaefer, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Hey, thanks. It's always great, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Frank Schaefer, who is a best-selling author of fiction and nonfiction. His parents, Francis and Edith Schaefer, were world-famous evangelical speakers and authors, and he previously worked with such figures as Pat Robertson, Jerry Falwell, and Focus on the Family's James Dobson. Frank Schaefer, however, felt increasingly alienated and experienced a crisis of faith that would ultimately lead him to depart from the evangelical movement, and Frank Schaefer's novels include Portofino and Saving Grandma, and his nonfiction books include Crazy for God, Patience with God, Faith for People Who Don't Like Religion or Atheism, Sex, Mom and God, and his latest, And God Said Billy. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcast at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Baby, this man.